Hello, Belinda.
Hi, Omar.
What is this week's Gratitude Blooming theme?
It's card number 38, the Protea, representing courage.
What in your heart are you willing to go to battle for? When you see that prompt this week and you hear that message and you see that flower, what comes to you?
Well, I'm struck by how it's standing tall and proud facing the sky. And I remember when Arlene and I were trying to come up with a prompt for this card, and it was a little edgy. We went back and forth trying to decide if going to battle was a little too strong. And ultimately, the plant was the deciding factor. We thought, wow, this is a plant that is hardy and resilient, and it does look like it's preparing for battle. So we just went with what the plant wanted for us. And I would say for me, what am I willing to go to battle for? Wow, that's a tough one, even though I've seen this prompt so many times.
I gotta believe it's something related to nature.
You read these headlines in the news about just how much the earth is suffering, how much decline is happening, and it hurts my heart to be like, wow, we are enjoying all the riches and abundance of this earth, of this soil, of the sky and the water, and it is heartbreaking that it comes at a cost to this planet that we're on. And so, yes, I believe if someone came to threaten to destroy our land in Mount Shasta, I would suit up with my armor like the Protea, and I would probably go to battle for that.
And I love this word because courage, as we know in French, the root is cœur, which means heart. And so courage is really about your heart and what are you willing to protect. And I think part of it, I think it's an interesting conversation about how do we be fearless in what we're protecting? Because sometimes we protect out of fear and we close off. But I feel like this is actually a heart opening kind of courage where there's actually willingness to be vulnerable and open. And I feel like we're seeing a change in the world around this. You know, I just was sharing with you before we started to record how on LinkedIn, I shared this post where it said, in the past, jobs were about muscles. Now they're about brains. But in the future, they'll be about the heart. And I don't know if it's because of AI and ChatGPT, but I think a lot of people are becoming much more aware that the knowledge economy is no longer going to be where you can thrive. And we're moving into what someone commented on the post is the wisdom economy. And in the wisdom economy, we have to really go to battle in different ways. It means we have to go to battle with empathy. We have to go to battle with like relationships. We have to go to battle with emotional intelligence. And so it's different than just sort of the calculating mind and the brain and outthinking and outsmarting. With AI, we're not going to outsmart certain things, right? Like it's already beating the best chess players in the world. It's already beating the best Go players in the world. And so the future is no longer about calculating. It's about being present and holding space for what really matters. And, you know, what really matters at the end of the day, I think, is our relationships. You know, my wife just sent me this article. It's this longitudinal study from Harvard that they've been doing for over, I think, 100 years almost or something like that. And they're showing that as people age, what matters most for long-term health and well-being is the quality of your relationships. And they've even done studies right now where they can show sort of like in your mid-40s, late-40s, they can look at your cholesterol level and they can look at the health of your relationships. And you can have high cholesterol, but healthy relationships, and you're more likely to be healthy in the long term than if you have low cholesterol, but low relationships. And so for me, which I appreciated that news since my cholesterol is elevated right now, but I feel like I've got healthy relationships. So I'm like, oh, good. I can take care of my physical body, you know, but what's harder to take care of is relationships. And so I feel like, you know, maybe what I'm willing to go to battle for are the relationships in my life and like who really matters, and family and friends and business partners and people who I'm in community with. It's like, okay, you know, this is what's going to really matter is our mutual health and well-being.
I'm literally seeing age at the end of that word courage, and
nice
it is,
one.
And it literally is about love at the end of the day, right? What do you love so much that you would protect, you know, at all costs?
And so this week we have a great conversation with Stacy Street, who, you know, really, and I don't know if you knew this before the conversation, but the word courage is a resource that she named for herself a few years ago and really something that she wanted to be able to draw upon in the work that she does. And, you know, in the work that she does in the world right now is predominantly at the Richmond Community Foundation, where she's the COO. But she has a long history of working in the nonprofit sector and being an executive director and a fundraiser, from music to the Humane Society to Planned Parenthood. And, you know, just someone who really just really is practicing what she preaches, right? And it's like, okay, how do we stand for the things that matter to us in the world?
When I think about what I stand for and what I am, it's love, compassion, and courage combined. And it was a few years ago that I specifically named courage because I wanted to be able to resource and draw on and build my own personal resource of courage. And I recognize that courage comes from the heart. You know, it's the word cur and French. And so I've always been a heart-led leader, and it's always, love is something that comes very naturally to me, as well as compassion, but they're all deeply connected. I love the way the flower is, you know, you have the bud in line drawing, but you also have the emerging, unfolding flower in the corner. And, you know, I feel like that's a lot of what I'm doing personally, what I'm trying to encourage in the people around me, is that unfolding and finding, you know, finding their true source of power.
You said that love comes naturally to you. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that isn't everyone's sort of natural instinct. And so I'd love to hear, what do you think, what can you attribute that sense of love coming naturally to you?
I kind of came into this world just thinking all people are, you know, have something to contribute, you know, not just from a Pollyanna optimist, like, glass half full kind of perspective, but like, I don't know, like I've never felt like I was different from other people at the core, you know, like I always was able to look at people and just see goodness. And I never understood why there was so much division in our world. You know, it's like, that's always what's been a bother for me. It's why I went into nonprofit. But I genuinely love people and animals and nature. Like, it's just, you know, like, it's hard for me to be angry at people. I don't hold grudges because I just don't see the point, you know, like there's got to be something better. I will say though, a caveat is that I have had grudges with myself. So learning how to love myself and to treat myself the way I do everybody else that's been my life practice.
The fact that you have this as your core value of like the love and the courage, when you feel your heart, even, you know, literally feeling it, What is it telling you now in this time about what are you willing to go to battle for? Like, it's like, that's like a really deep, fierce kind of love. It's own unique kind of flavor.
My life's work, I think, you know, finally figuring out what I really want to go to battle for is this idea that everyone, you know, deserves to be accepted, deserves to be loved, you know, deserves to experience love themselves, loving others. And so how do we help connect people and build relationships so we can end othering and polarizing and separating and dividing, because that's what's ruined our world. And, you know, I believe deeply in the next generations that are coming up, that they question and see things differently. I think I'm finding my way, and what I'm willing to go to battle for is this belief in our shared humanity.
It's beautiful how many directions you could take in your life to get to that point of this mission, Stacey. So I'm really curious how you have discovered or chose consciously the specific things that you're doing and working on now to tend to that.
My current work is in a community foundation that's very place-based in Contra Costa County, California. But the work that we're doing is all about striving towards equity. And the, you know, the questions, like I was saying, the questions that the people on our team, particularly when we started consciously hiring people from the community that have been impacted by the very isms and systems and narratives and policies that we want to shift towards equity, you know, and the trust that they put in me to, you know, even though I didn't have the same background and experience, that they trusted me to have their back and to, you know, to be accountable to our work. And that happened simultaneous with meeting my husband and building a family that I, you know, that really is based on and birthed out of love, like, because I was willing to finally, like, face my fears, which were, you know, actually getting in the way of the very value that I wanted to achieve for myself.
You can't be courageous if you're paralyzed by your own fears and not even knowing what those things are. Could you talk a bit more about that?
Courage is not acting in the absence of fear. It's, you know, it's being able to overcome your fears and act in spite of your fear, which I finally realized. So a lot of my fears were, you know, socialized about, you know, being very shared around not being good enough. And like I said, not being compassionate to myself the way that I am to everybody else. But I also realized that I had a deep-seated fear around loneliness, not being alone, because I have a lot of practice and experience being alone, and I feel pretty comfortable in that space. But loneliness, feeling lonely, is a very different thing. And I have felt that a lot of my life. And I was realizing that I actually was helping create that in many ways, because by not really stepping into my authentic self and my values of what I wanted to be. Examples, I'm a big goofball. I'm, you know, I'm really weird in a lot of ways. I mean, seriously, like, there's a lot of what I look like and how I present myself and the, you know, the spaces that I've been in that were what I was expected to be and where I was expected to be, and the kind of cultures and the work environments that I stepped into, the jobs even that I would fulfill were very much in that space and not really where I wanted to be. And I think for a long time, I stopped really seeing myself truly. And I doubted myself constantly in terms of, am I really standing up for something? And am I really a leader? But I think in the course of, again, my current work and the Radical Transformational Leadership Program, where really understanding that leadership isn't necessarily what we see it in our culture, the way it's been. Leadership isn't hierarchical. Anyone can be a leader, particularly, you know, if you are willing to imagine new ways of being and doing, and if you're willing to inspire others to be leaders themselves. And both of those are things that I have always done. And I think as I really stepped into courage, I started remembering instances in my own life where I really have been courageous, but they were forgotten or repressed because a lot of the environments that I was in, that was discouraged, or it was viewed as a negative. I wasn't accepted. And I wasn't able to fully be the heart-led leader that I am. Like, leading from love is, you know, like I said, it's very natural and comfortable, but you said it, Omar, it's scary to a lot of people. They don't get it, or they don't want it, because it's, you know, it just brings up a lot in them, you know, their own insecurities. And so I was choosing environments where I couldn't tap into that power and be who I was. And so no wonder I kept hitting barriers. So it's all kind of self, you know, vicious circle in a way. I think the final step for me, and why this podcast is really timely, was in this beautiful new family that we have. We unfortunately had a tragedy where my 23-year-old stepson was diagnosed with a stage 4 cancer sarcoma a little over a year ago, and it progressed really quickly, and he passed away in June last year. And, you know, completely unexpected, and, you know, one of the rising bright stars of our next generation. And I didn't have enough time with him myself. And, you know, just, I mean, there's no why behind that, you know, like when you're faced with that. But what emerged in our family, again, was just this amazing commitment to love, to honoring his memory, to honoring his legacy, and to being whatever we all can be together in this moment, because that would be the actual way to really honor him and his memory. It's just synergy, like you said, you know, the combination of the moment in time where both my husband and I are individually, as a team, as a family, we have financial resources. And I've also been working in transformational philanthropy. That's another area of really recognizing how philanthropy itself has been inadvertently perpetuating a lot of the inequity and othering and division that we see in our world. And so now I have an opportunity to walk the walk, because we're actually creating a foundation, and thinking about how we do that differently, and how we, can set this up and create this from the beginning with courage and love and equity kind of at the heart.
I'm reading this book, The Miracle of Water, right now. Mm-hmm. And it's this photographer who crystallizes water after sharing a word, and the shape of the crystals changes depending on the word. And so if it's an ugly word, it creates like an ugly crystal. And the most beautiful crystal he's been able to create was born out of saying the words love and gratitude. And for him, you know, he said that love is what we give, gratitude is then what we receive. And so that was kind of the relationship between love and gratitude. As you think about the act of love, right, and the practice of gratitude, how does that really then inform your imagination as you're now really being given this opportunity to honor a loved one, and, you know, continue to create that beautiful world that your heart knows is possible.
Yeah, well, I think it's the first word that came into my mind when you asked the question was liberating. You know, I think, like, by stepping into this space of love, you know, I'm able to be myself. And I think, you know, I'm releasing all of the 50 plus years of acculturated training and expectations and, you know, what I look like, what I feel like, you know, my education, you know, all of that. Like, I can just be, I think. And I think I'm seeing everything differently. You have to be conscious. You know, I think that is the other practice, like being conscious of your own actions and behavior. Cause it's not just what you say and do. It's also who you are and how you show up. The how, I think that's what I'm realizing, like the how of everything is almost more important than the what and the why. You know, and so much of our world and our work and our relationships are structured around the what and the why and not the how. So I think for me, being in that space of love is allowing me to really think about that differently. And we can now actually put resources behind, you know, a lot of those intangibles that, you know, I think most funders and most people aren't willing to really prioritize right now because there's so much need and it's so much urgency in so many different areas. But, you know, we're never going to fix those urgent problems long term if we don't start focusing on some of these other intangibles around narrative change and culture and norms and these kinds of questions you're asking.
I love a couple things that you said, Stacey. One is just embracing your goofballness because, well, I understand now why you're such an advocate for people of color, because you, it's like when you embrace your weirdness,
yeah.
You know, like you can empathize with people that visually are different. People would never know that looking at you, that you felt that way. But that's obviously a very deep and lived experience that you've had to navigate about just relating with yourself. Mm-hmm. And the other piece is, you know, how can a lot of people, you know, when we hold space with the cards, there's been a couple leaders that have mentioned that, like, what's profound is having an agenda-less, non-outcome driven container for feelings, the how, the being to emerge. And I can't imagine how philanthropy would look different, or culture, right? Because that's ultimately what culture is. Community, culture, family, anything that involves people coming together is all about the feeling and the how and the being. And I love that you now will have the opportunity to have a blank canvas to bring to this work without any, like, external constraints, really.
Part of why we're looking at creating an actual foundation is because, you know, I really want to make sure any dollars that come through that are associated with, you know, my stepson and his legacy really goes towards supporting the broader community. It's not going to be a big restrictive grant making, and we're not going to go out there with this 12-page RFP for people to read. And, you know, it's going to be very open-ended, and how, you know, how we fund will be based on conversations that we have with people and what their vision is, and, you know, trust and, you know, a willingness for us to make mistakes and to learn and then to share out to the community. And then I feel very strongly I need to, you know, I need to use whatever influence and connections I have in the philanthropy community to be a spokesperson and to, you know, ask questions that nobody else is willing to ask. and to, you know, source courage in some of these spaces to say, you know, hey, what's your actual value? Because what you're doing right now is out of alignment with that, you know. So we are approaching every opportunity from the standpoint that we're not the experts. You know, we have the resources and the privilege and the power, but we don't have the expertise and the knowledge of what's really needed to help, you know, in certain ways make our world a better place.
Having spent a decent amount of my career as an entrepreneur and, you know, and having been on the investment side, and it always struck me as ironic that philanthropy, you're like, it's free money in the sense, like, there, it's not, you're not an investor where you need a return on capital. You're not government where it's like a safety net. And you really do have, you create your own restrictions in many ways. And so to me, it always felt like, a certain irony to have a overly baked theory of change. That evolves every few years anyways. Mm-hmm. And it's like, hey, let's just see what happens, right? Like, how do we, invite more of that, as you said, emergent strategy, right? Like the Adrienne Murray Brown, I think, mm-hmm. you know, nailed so well, which is we need to be less set in our ways. Like, and I think partly of it, if we're going to imagine a new future, then we actually then have to co-create it. Right. If we think we already, like, I come out of real estate, and one of the worst things that ever happened in real estate was the ease of design in renderings, because all of a sudden the design process actually disappears as soon as you create a rendering of what you're going to go build. Well, and then you're just working backwards and going to go build. You're no longer designing. You're no longer creating. You're just working backwards to some picture. And so for me, and you know, this is, I got to work with Frank Gehry. And so like getting to work with someone who we didn't know what we were designing for like 2 or 3 years, and everybody was always hounding. I mean, when you're working at that level, you're talking about newspapers and advocacy groups, and everybody's like, what are you building? Everybody thinks you have a secret. And you're like, no, we're listening. We're co-creating. We are learning right now. And so many people right now are used to design by rendering. And so I think to me, like, how you create philanthropy, which is like, let's not paint this sort of static image. Let's actually just take the paintbrush out and the colors out, and let's just, you know, work together and see what this sort of image looks like. That to me feels way more authentic to the kind of future that you're describing in terms of how do we be more loving? How do we be more compassionate? How do we be more present? Like, what does equity really look like and feel like?
Mm-hmm. One of the things we love to do is just share practices. And I feel like I'm learning and growing every week, because I'm just hearing like new ways that people try and do things that, you know, outside of their own, constraints, you know, and social constraints. Mm-hmm. And so like for you, what would there be like a recipe or a secret sauce or a practice that you feel like has really worked for you in connecting with your heart and cultivating the courage? Cause it can get really broad. What was like the one thing that like helped you the most to be like, oh, I'm a goofball and that's fine.
Sing. That's my one, I've called it kind of my professional hobby. It's the one thing throughout my whole life I've invested a lot of resource and time and energy in doing for me. I realized one day that when I sing, when I perform, I have no problem standing on stage even as a soloist, and I've presented solo recitals, and that's just my heart and my authentic self pours into my music when I perform, and I connect with audiences and that communicating whatever I'm feeling, and it's always very emergent. I'm very fortunate to be able to have somatic coaching on an ongoing basis, and the centering practice you started the, you know, open the space with is something I try to do more regularly, but there are a number of practices that that my coach has been able to help me work on consistently. And really it all comes down to integrating my heart and my mind and my body. And the one that's really resonant for me that was really recent was, you know, I think I'm a middle-aged woman, you know, there's a lot in the media about our body that is not, you know, not positive, right? And the old fears that I named earlier around not good enough and not enough. And, you know, like I vowed not to make resolutions this year because resolutions just seem like they're a recipe for self-disappointment a lot of the time. So anyway, my coach was like, try this on, like sit back, and put your hands on your right there on that part of yourself that maybe you're not feeling like you love and you're connected to, and just like breathe into, to bring this back around to what this is all about, to gratitude, like being grateful for my core, you know, my belly, my gut, my inner wisdom. The last time I really did this for real before this practice was when I was pregnant, you know, and realizing like after that, then not sitting and intentionally and consciously honoring my middle, my core, my belly for being more than just being able to do that. You know, like, okay, that's done now. Now I'm just stuck with this belly, you know, but really thinking differently about, like, there's a reason why we call it our gut instinct, right? There is great wisdom and power, like your core is what sustains you, allows you to be balanced and functioning in the world. So I think that's been really profound for me to kind of tie it all together and think about my integrated self and how to be different and think different and connect literally to my actual heart and voice.
I really appreciated her focus on non-resolutions. Because I do feel like annual resolutions are like, it's something like 70% of people fail their New Year's resolution in the first week or something. It's like an insane number. And really, it's about what's our daily resolution? What are we committed to this day? You know, maybe a monthly resolution. What are we committed to for the next 30 days? What are these bite-sized things that we can really wrap our arms around and really kind of see through, and then also kind of know like, okay, didn't happen this 30 days. Let me try the next 30 days. Right. And it gives us sort of an automatic chance to reset. Whereas if we make an annual or New Year's resolution, sort of like, what, I got to wait till next year? No, it feels like too long. And then that, what I heard was self-compassion, right? So from courage of the theme to compassion, which we talked about, to really self-compassion, which is like, how do we be a friend to ourselves? And, you know, this is, I think, then it's about being in right relationship. And right relationship isn't just our relationship to each other, our relationship to our planet, but just also our relationship to ourselves and our body, and really making room for all of that grace.
Yeah, and I don't often associate courage with my body. And there is something powerful and simple about, yeah, will you go to battle for your body? This exquisite, complex ecosystem that keeps you alive every single day. Don't take that for granted. And so I'm definitely going to be doing this practice every day this week and just not taking that for granted and having the courage to be with my body and protect my body. I love it.
Well, this is, I think, right on point for gratitude blooming. How do we embody what matters? We encourage you to check out gratitudeblooming.com so you can find the tools, the newsletter, the email sign up, our music album, all the different ways that you can embody gratitude to really have this as a regular practice in your life. These reminders, these simple reminders. We found all the ways to really create this gratitude ecosystem and make this hopefully a little bit easier and a little more joyful.
And I'm loving the daily ritual of lighting that candle and playing the soundtrack. So for those of you that, you know, want a multi-sensory experience, go to our shop at gratitudeblooming.com to get the Curiosity Candle and check out the Garden of Healing album. They make such a good morning ritual. Highly recommend.
Wishing you all well.
Cheers.